Okay, so welcome to our lecture, Relational Databases. This is Material Commons, as usual. So, I hope that, I don't know if I sent a note around about this, but to do the examples that I'll be talking about, and you have still have time to do this, you need to have Firefox. Okay? So you got to download Firefox if you don't already have it. So download Firefox, and then add the SQLite Manager. Now, if you just go up to Google and type SQLite Manager, it'll be the first link. You'll click a button and it'll hit that little Add to Firefox while you're inside Firefox, and then poof, you'll have it. It's a little weird that this piece of software actually runs inside Firefox. It's not really a piece of web software. It's just a Firefox plugin. Over the last few years, we've used a desktop application to do this, but that desktop application kept blowing up. Somebody would upgrade their Windows and the desktop application would blow up, or they'd upgrade their Macintosh and the desktop application blew up because the programmers had stopped working on it. So this is their way of, we have this software that's cool and easy to use, but it's got a weird startup pattern. So while I'm sort of blathering on at the beginning, install the SQLite Manager for Firefox if you haven't already done so, and install Firefox if you haven't already done so. Okay, and the detail is also on the little sheet of paper at the very top as to what you're supposed to install. So if we think of CTools, when you log into CTools and you type your Kerberos ID and you type your password and hit enter, and across the top you see the list of your classes. You take that for granted. Like when I log in, I see my classes, and when you log in, you see your classes, and when you log in, you see your classes. It's like presenting a different list to all the people. Of course, we take this for granted. So the CTools data that stores each of our list of classes, the total amount of that data is probably 4 or 5 terabytes right now. And so if you wrote a Python program similar to what we've been writing in this class, and you had to scan 4 or 5 terabytes to look up what classes and had to read it all, it'd probably take an hour to log in. And during the hour that it took you to log in, no one else could log in. But once you were logged in after that hour, then someone else could log in. The second student in the morning could log in. So between 8 o'clock and noon, we could get 4 people logged into CTools because the data is 4 terabytes. And if we had to scan that data sequentially, it would take an hour for everybody to log in. That would be pretty bad. People would complain. It's like, wait a sec. 4 people. People get stay up really late at night. Like, I'm going to grab the 2 a.m. slot and log in and do my homework at 2 a.m. But in reality, CTools figures out what your list of classes in somewhat less than a quarter of a second. So somehow it's not reading all the data that's sitting in CTools. That's where relational databases come in. Takes a problem that takes an hour and makes it a quarter of a second. So what we're going to go through today is ways to organize data to make it really fast to look things up, even if the amount of data you're looking through is very, very large. And relational databases are kind of this mathematical computer science concept that captures this notion of how to scan a lot of data really fast and assemble just the little bits that you need. If you go buy a book or start reading online, you will find 2 accents, 2 variants of terminology that describe databases. Some folks will call these things database, tables, rows, and columns. Seems simple enough because they are database, tables, rows, and columns. And others will say database, relation, tuples, and attributes. So one is kind of like what normal people use to describe this stuff, and the other is what like hoity-toity mathematicians used to describe this stuff, or computer scientists. They're saying the exact same thing. So when they're talking like the mathematics that underlie relational databases, they're like, it's the cross product. The relation is the cross product of the tuples and the attributes. It's like, I think, don't you mean rows and columns? And the answer is yes, that's what they mean, but they like to use the word cross product to make it sound really cool. And so I'm just saying, if you run across words that use this highfalutin terminology, don't let go, whoa, what, I didn't know, I don't know anything, and all my brain kind of, we'll just call them rows and columns and tables, okay, for this class. But there are 2 terminologies. And so, for example, if you go to Wikipedia and you ask about relational databases, they'll say this: a relation is a set of tuples with the same attributes across blah 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 blah. Relations described as a table, blah blah blah. Well, it's really rows and columns. As a matter of fact, a lot of us think of this as just kind of like a really smart spreadsheet. Now, that the smart spreadsheet is kind of like 80%. Just like you can do a lot of stuff with a spreadsheet, but sooner or later Python becomes better. Right? Python can scan a lot more data. Python can kind of like figure out what the important bits of data as it's like reading, whereas the spreadsheet, you kind of have to know what you're doing. And so, you can do a lot of stuff with a spreadsheet. And a lot of the things that we did in Python, we could have done them with a spreadsheet, but then we got to the point where we couldn't. The same is true with spreadsheets and databases. Some things that we'll do with databases are like, dude, it looks just like a spreadsheet. And then we'll get to this thing where, no, it's not a spreadsheet anymore. And for those of you who've used Microsoft Access, Access is more of a database-y thing, right? And so there's like Excel and then Access. And if you've used Access, you might have been using some SQL or approximately using SQL database language, kind of without even knowing it. It's not that hard. And so, if we look at how cTools runs, I mean, how many people in this room have been a database administrator in their life? Wow, okay. So I apologize to database administrators for what I'm about to say. Generally, you find database administrators are mean people. They're very cranky. And the reason is that the database administrator is sort of DBA, is responsible for running the production system. And so right now, there is some poor database administrator just sitting in some dark basement watching the database to see if it blows up. Question?
What's the difference between a database administrator and like a system admin?
Well, a system admin worries more about the operating system, and the database administrator just worries about the database. And so developers are people like me. We're good looking, we're cool, we travel first class, we eat great food, we hang out with our friends in faraway locations, we get tattoos, and database administrators sit and keep the system running. And I'll come up with an idea on an airplane and I'll put into the application and that will break the system, and the database administrator's pager goes off. I don't have a pager. Like, I can't be bothered with that kind of stuff. I'm busy. I'm eating dinner with my friends in an exotic location. I don't want to be disturbed. And so this is why database administrators get a little cranky after a while, because they feel like they have all responsibility and they get none of the fun. Of course, if you go to like the database administrator conference where they go once a year, I'm sure they cut loose pretty hardcore at that point because they're under a lot of stress and now they're out of the office for a while. And so I, on cTools, have no access to the actual database. It runs on completely separate servers. I don't even have access to the production cTools, but I can write code and put it in. And sometimes I will write something and it'll slow the system down, and then a bunch of people scramble and they fix it and tell me what, you know, and we all work together and we fix it. But so the database administrator is generally responsible for the health of the database part of an application. The software that I write, cTools, talks to the database using a programming language that we're going to learn called SQL, which is Structured Query Language. The database administrator types into some magic database tools, and this is where we're going to play mostly today, but in later weeks we'll actually start writing applications. And these database tools also talk straight to the database using the same SQL. Sometimes the database administrators type SQL indirectly as well. And so, this is the definition of a database administrator from Wikipedia, and it's a great responsibility, and it's a highly skilled position, and they're very, very well compensated. I hope the three of you that were database administrators were well compensated in your role, unless you were kind of just like a little tiny database administrator, like they just made you do it. But in general, if you think about the database administrators here at the university, they make a lot of money. And because if we don't pay them enough at the university, they're going to go to some company and make a lot of money. And so we hotshot cowboy developers, you know, we can make money too, but the database administrators are actually thought of as very, very special individuals. They're just a little grumpy when they get in rooms with people like me. So the place where all this comes together is in a database model or a database schema. Now the key to databases is that we have this special software called database software, database system, and we have to make a contract with it, because for it to go through 4 terabytes of data and find the classes that belong to you, we have had to have given the database a lot of detail about the structure of that data so it can jump straight to what it needs to see. So we have to make this contract to say, this is how we're going to store our data in this database. The language we use to talk to database engines, to talk to databases, is called Structured Query Language, SQL. It is a programming language. SQL didn't exist when I first came to college in the 70s. It was kind of invented in the 80s. It was kind of lame in the 80s and then got much better in the 90s. And so the first time I encountered SQL was when I was getting my master's degree in the early 80s. And relational databases in the early 80s were terribly slow. They weren't nearly as fast as the other things that we were used to using, which was called index sequential files. And all you would do is sort of leap ahead in the file. But not nearly as cool as relational databases. These people came up with the mathematics that prove relational databases was a good idea. And so that's fine and good. The math people figured out this stuff. And then people would write software, and the software was really crappy, because it didn't sort of take advantage or truly understand the underlying mathematics. And then a few companies figured out underlying mathematics and how to make these things really scream, really rock solid and very fast. And those companies became very wealthy in the figuring out how to make relational databases work. The best known of these companies is Oracle. And they have a boat that goes really fast, made out of carbon fiber, and they just won the America's Cup. As a matter of fact, that's where I was last week. And they got these beautiful buildings and like a lagoon, their own little corporate lagoon, and 5 buildings and all these people that make a bunch of money, and Larry Ellison, who's the owner of it, and he's in Iron Man 3, and there's all these product placements for Oracle and Iron Man 3. So he has like enough money. I mean, his boat is like, I think, 1.5 times longer than this building, because he figured out how to make the underlying math, take advantage of the underlying mathematics of databases and build a database engine that was really fast. So these database engines like Oracle, MySQL, Microsoft's SQL Server are highly sophisticated pieces of software that we interact with by giving them contracts about the shape of the data, letting them optimize how to lay the data out and how to find it and retrieve it. And then we communicate also with this SQL language. So we don't worry about how to do it. And so SQL turns out to be a really simple language. And the reason I teach Python first and SQL second in this class is if I taught you SQL first, you would refuse to learn Python. So you didn't know SQL was coming. Because SQL is a very elegant language compared to Python. Because in SQL, and some of you were feeling this, especially toward the end where you started to do lists and dictionaries, it's like, you really were wishing there was just a way to say, this is what I want, and you go figure it out. I want a list of these things grouped by this, done by that. And SQL is like that. You don't do SQL in a series of steps. The statement, you got like this one statement that gets longer and longer and longer, and it encodes everything that you want without giving the fine details of how to go get it. What we did in Python is the fine details of how to get it. You could write a database manager in Python. Wouldn't be the right best language for it. But Python, you'd be like, oh, wait a sec. I got a string, and I got an integer, and I got this other stuff. So I'll write some Python to figure all this stuff out. So they're written in a much lower language. The database manager that we're going to play with today and for the rest of the semester is one called SQLite. It's not one of the big database engines. CTools runs on Oracle. Sakai runs on Oracle or MySQL all over the place, and SQL servers if you're running a Microsoft shop. And there's all these kind of little tiny databases, and SQLite is one of these little tiny database companies. Or it's a free, and it's fast, and it's easy to install. You probably have 10 copies of SQLite in your backpack. Yeah?
What do you mean when you say that SQLite is small compared to the other
versions? How much source code it has. So if you think about, you're downloading a an app to your phone, some are big and some are small. Some are like, you know, 1 megabyte and some are like 40 megabytes. So this is so small that it can be part of another application. So if you have an app on your iPhone, I mean, I just got an upgrade this morning on iTunes of my computer and it said something like, make it so that the screen appears more rapidly when you have a large collection in your iTunes. That's because iTunes has SQLite built into it. I mean, it doesn't just read a flat file. It has databases that keep its tracks. And so this is so tiny and it's free that all these products embed it inside of it. So you already have SQLite inside Python because SQLite's built into Python. You download Python, you have SQLite. You say import SQLite 3. Poof, you got a database. It's already there. Python does not ship without SQLite. It just comes because it's so tiny. Your car probably has SQLite in it. Your radio in your car probably has SQLite in it because they just put it in. I saw a talk by the guy who did SQLite and he said you'd be surprised at the number of people I can't list that use SQLite internally, so Skype. Your television these days probably has SQLite in it. Okay. So hopefully by now you have gotten SQLite working. And the hardest part we got to deal with here, am I done with this? Yeah, we're done with that. Okay. So the trickiest part of all of this is getting to the point where you're actually running the SQLite manager. I will show you in slow motion how you do it on a Apple. So you've got Firefox, it opens up a screen, but that's not what we're interested in. There's this tools button, and then there is this thing, once you've installed it, called SQLite manager. For Windows, there's some other like developer button or something. It's in a somewhat non-obvious place. So it might take the Windows people a little while to actually find it after you've installed it. Is there a place that says add-ons or developer or web developer? Did you find it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on the what? Web developer and then you go down all the way to the bottom and it has SQLite manager.
Okay, web developer go in Windows, web developer go all the way down to the bottom and it has SQLite manager. Thank you. Thank you. I should take some screenshots of where it's at so that I could just have it in the slides from now on. Okay, so when you do this, it kind of behaves in a strange way. And it brings up this separate window. I don't know what it does on the Windows, but this is like an application. And then what I do is I minimize the actual Mozilla Netscape, the Firefox window. So I have this thing. And it's really kind of like a desktop application that happens to be leaning on Firefox for some of its user interface interaction. Okay? And it's a way for them to write the code and be portable across PC and Mac and others so that they delegate all the complexity about dealing with the operating system to Firefox. But it's really just like a program. So Firefox is running, but it's really just this program that's running embedded in Firefox. Again, this software we've been using for years kept breaking, and so this has not broken since they switched to sticking it inside of Firefox. Anybody having any problems getting the SQLite manager up that wants to? Okay, so we are going to create a new database and we're going to give it a name. I'm going to call it SI502. It'll probably overwrite it because I did this before. And I'm going to store it on my desktop. Oh, scumbags. Hang on. It'll work for you, but not for me. Desktop. Get rid of this file. Goodbye file. Whoa, a lot of stuff in the trash. Hope it wasn't important stuff. That's why you back up. Okay, so now I have, hide that. So I got my SQLite manager up, and I click the little new button, which looks like a piece of paper, and I say si502.sqlite. Oh, you're right. There we go. And I'll put it on my desktop. That's fine. Okay. So now I have a file that should appear on my desktop. Right now it has nothing in it. Okay? So in like production systems, you actually tend to run the database on a separate piece of hardware and talk to it across a network. We're going to kind of collapse that all down. There's a file in your hard drive. We're going to talk SQL to this software that's going to read and write the file. We're not going to read and write the file directly. We are going to send commands to SQLite, and it's going to read and write the file as it sees fit. We're going to give it a contract as to how to organize its data, and then let it deal with how the data is organized. So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to create a table with this little button there, the Create Table button. And it's going to ask us what we're going to put in the table. And this is kind of like a spreadsheet, except we're going to give it even more detail. So I'm going to make one column named name, and I would like that to be text. And I would like another column called email, and I want that one to be text. Oh, and I need to name my table users. Okay, so I'll name my table users, and I'm giving a column. So again, I'm making this contract.
I don't know.
I have to look it up. Okay, so I'll say okay. And then what it's going to do is it's actually going to, the actual act of creating a table, there's a command for it, which we're going to use later. That's an SQL command, create table users, and then in parentheses two columns, a name that's text, a column called name that's text, and a column called email that's text. And I will say, yes.
Is that what they call them, tuples?
It would be like a tuple. A row is kind of like a tuple. Very, absolutely.
Is it paired in that thing?
Well, this row and this table would be like two tuples, because we'll do more than two, right? So there'll be three tuples, four tuples, and that's why they talk about a relation is a cross product of a tuple and an attribute.
Yeah.
And so the tuple word, a tuple word comes kind of from an underlying math notion of the thing called the tuple that's a mathy word. Yeah. Okay, so if you got it working there, you should have users. And we should be able to go take a look here. And there's nothing in there. And so we are going to add a record. So we'll say add. And I'm going to use Chuck, csev@umich.edu. I'll add that one. And as I press add, it's giving me the SQL, which we'll look at, insert into main values. That line that's insert into is the actual SQL that's being sent to SQLite. We have this user interface that's like being a wizard for us, that we click on things and then it sends SQL. Kind of like the browser would send a GET request for us. Our SQLite manager is reading what we're asking and then sending. Later we'll just send this stuff ourselves directly. So I'm going to insert that, and let's see, I'll put Grov, and I will call him superman@umich.edu, and then I will add Olga, and I will call her cernnerd@umich.edu, and I'll have put Gab in, and we'll say Nat. And so I put four people in. So you now see these four people in my rows. So I've got Chuck, Olga, Grav, and Gab. I put them in. I gave them email addresses, and I just kind of typed the stuff in. And if you're like sort of unimpressed at this point, that's great. You should be unimpressed at this point. It's not that difficult. Okay, so we just made a database, made a contract, and started putting data into that database. We already did those. Okay, so we did that all with the wizard. So now we are going to use SQL and do some of this stuff sort of in the raw way. So what we just got done doing, it wasn't really SQL, it's just we had a clicky interface, a wizardy interface. Now this is where this sheet of paper will come in very handy, but the thing that will come in even more handier is the Microsoft Word version of it, where you can just cut and paste. So, or you can cut and paste that one right there. So you can open this, and everything I'm going to do is on the sheet of paper, so you can kind of skim it and look at it. But so you don't have to type it, just kind of copy and paste this stuff. And it works just fine to copy and paste it. Okay? I'm going to copy and paste it from the slides because it's all on the slides as well. But you can open the Word document and copy and paste. So we're going to do our first SQL statement. Hang on a second. You know, I've been... So case doesn't matter for the SQL. I like uppercase for the keywords. So if we look at this statement, there are some SQL keywords. Insert into is an SQL keyword. Some keywords are like two words, but insert and into just go together. They're like one word. SQL is kind of a little wordy at times. I think it makes it more readable. Like it could say insert users, but it says insert into users. It's just like a little more direct. Not that computers really value this, but I think we humans kind of value it. I mean, I type SQL all the time, and it feels natural to me after a while. So insert into is like a keyword. Users is the name of the table. Then followed by a parenthesis list, comma separated, of column name. Values is an SQL keyword. And then a one-to-one correspondence for each column of the actual values we're going to insert. So I'm going to copy and paste this thing, and I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to execute SQL. So this is a little window where the database administrators like can talk straight to the database, right? We're not using wizards, and we just type in insert into users, yada, 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 make a string. And then we run it. And then it says this was not an error. Now, if you made a mistake, like forgot the parentheses and did run SQL, it would say something's wrong. And usually those are really bad errors, and it's really, so what you do is you just like stare at it and figure out what you did wrong and put a parenthesis in. But I already did it. So now if I do browse and search, see that Ted is indeed there. Okay? So that's our first SQL programming statement. Insert into is kind of like hello world. So that's insert. Hang on, I want these to be uppercase. Okay, the opposite of insert is delete. Delete from is a keyword, even though it's two words. Users is the name of a table. And a where clause is something we find on lots of SQL statements that allow us to select, reduce the actions of whatever we're doing to a set of rows. So we're going to delete the rows that happen to be in users when it's true that the email is ted@umich.edu. So I'm going to go over and I'm going to grab copy that, and I'm going to go over execute SQL, and I'm going to say that delete from, not an error. If I go back to browse and search, Ted's gone. Again, somewhat underwhelming. Not very exciting. So we can change a record, update, table name, set is a keyword, name equals, this is column, equals new value, and then a where clause. If we left the where clause off, it would actually set all the columns to be named Charles. So we need a where clause. So you say, like, I really only want to do it on one row. So you need the where clause. So we go over to execute SQL, run it, not an error. So now you see that my name has been successfully updated from Chuck to Charles. So it's like we can sort of dive in and change one little thing. Now for four records, it doesn't matter. But if we have 150,000 users and you want to change your first name, the database can go in and go boop without touching much other data. It's all sort of random and finds its way. So even this thing of being able to update something in the middle, there's no spreadsheet in the world that could hold the stuff that CTools is holding, but yet CTools can, in a hundredth of a second, update any little piece of data. It's actually pretty dang clever about that. So update. So we've got insert, we've got delete, we've got update. And the last thing we are going to do is read. The keyword is select. And then you take select and then a list of columns, and in this case star means all the columns, and then from, and then that's the name of a database. So if I go over to my SQL, I will say select star from users. Database administrators type this a lot. This is kind of the hello world, right? Show me what's there. What did I end up with then in that user table? I can say, I can reduce the number of columns by putting email. Oops. I can say I only want to see the email, and then it only shows me the email. I can also add a where clause to the select. Nice and uppercase, just the way I like it. I can have a where clause, which means show me, but only when this thing is true. So then I was only going to show me one, because there's only one record in my database. Okay, so this order by, again, order by is like one keyword. It happens to be two words, but it's one keyword. And then you can pick a column that you want it to be ordered by. So I say select from users order by email. So you'll notice that the emails here are, I chose emails that didn't have the same letters as the person's last name. So this one's CERN Nerd is first, C7 is second, Nat is third, and Superman is fourth. And if I order it by name, databases are really good at sorting, then it's ordered by name. So when CTools is showing you the list of classes, it has a select statement about this long. And it comes back in a hundredth of a second. It's got some joins, which we'll learn in the next section. Okay. So this is what I just showed you. If you're saying like, I don't get it, it's way too easy. Well, first, congratulations. And second, it is easy. This is why it's a really simple language. It's like this programmable, these four core commands of insert, delete, update, and select. Rows, columns, name them, do stuff to them, whatever. And some people probably been using like Microsoft Access without hardly even, you just kind of pick the language up after a while. You just do the stuff and you don't realize, you know, how sophisticated some of this stuff is. Now, this is kind of like 50% of it, but that's not the power. The power is not just to have kind of like the ability to rewrite this stuff or sort it or whatever. The power has to do with when we build more than one table. So everything we've done so far is just one table, rows, columns. It's kind of like a big spreadsheet. And it is like a big programmable spreadsheet. But the more interesting thing happens when we have data that we put in multiple tables and then connect those tables back together. We break data into multiple tables and then connect them back together. And so database design is a bit of an art form. I learned database design late in life. I learned it in a professional setting where I didn't know anything and I showed up in a room and we just had a bunch of coffee and we had a bunch of people in the room. We were designing a new application from scratch. And there's like a bunch of smarter people than me, and they just like, let's do the data model. It turns out I was the architect of the project, but I didn't know data modeling. So all these people are drawing the data model. And it's just this really fun thing. Because you have the end users in the room, you have the developers of the application in the room, you have database designers in the room, and there's lots of things that sort of have to be balanced, right? Because if you don't design the database right, you can't create the end user functionality that you want to build. And if the application's too hard to write, so you got all these things that sort of, do you want this feature? How fast do you want this feature? How often is it going to be used? All these little questions. One of the things that we're working on in CTools that we've been working on now for 2.5 years is a dashboard. I may have told you about this, that is supposed to be the first thing you see when you come in. It'll tell you all the due dates of all your things and all the recently uploaded things and this, that, and the other thing. It's a real simple notion, except that if we did it without thinking about it, we would crush the system from a performance perspective. So we spent like 2 years working on this, and part of it was building a data model that would not crush the system, because it means every time you log in, you're going to be given this really useful dashboard, and you will love it because we're helping you to do what you need to do. Right? Oh, here's the file that just got uploaded. Here's the due date for this, and it's all right there. But it turns out that if we don't database model it right, the whole thing just no one will be able to log in if we were to do it in a simple way, because you have to look too many places and pull all these things together. So we had to come up with a thing. So the database design usually starts with some kind of a picture that's got boxes and arrows. And a simple one looks like this. Each of these boxes is a table, and you can kind of see this application is clearly about event scheduling. Right? So we're going to have a series of events. We're going to have people. We're going to have people who are choosing to go to events, where the events are, and if there is more than one event for an occasion. And if you go to work somewhere, you will often, that's doing heavy application development database, there will be a thing like this about the size of a whiteboard on the wall. And this will be the data model. And you print this thing out. And you as an application developer, at some point you'll go, look, wait, oh, I want to make a new screen that, like, okay, and I need the data from here and here, but then I've got to go get this data, which means I've got to go through here to there. So this turns out not to just be like showing off. People use it a lot because you got to understand the data model to figure out how to produce a new feature in the application. So drawing pictures like this is really important. And so there's a lot of science and a lot of math that goes into data modeling, but we can reduce it down for this class into a couple of simple rules. First off, you kind of end up with a table for each thing in the real world, like a user table, a course table, an assignment table. Those are the kind of things that you're going to find inside CTools. Kind of when there's a thing in the real world, there's kind of like something in there, and there should only be one for users. There should be only one picture of me inside of CTools. And another rule that's called a database normalization, that I simplify down to, don't put the same string data in twice. You've got to not have duplicated string data. Because part of this is there's so much scanning going on in database retrieval. If you have string data, even though it seems like 100 characters is not much, it's a lot when you compare it to a number which is like 2 or 4 characters. So it turns out that greatly reduces the amount of data and greatly increases the speed at which matching can be done. And so if we were to start a company to build software that would manage people's audio that they took off of CDs, and they wanted to play this audio, we would maybe come up with a user interface mock-up that looks like this. So here's all your tracks, here's how long the tracks are, here's the artist, made it an album, what the genre is, and what the rating is, and what the count is. So our user experience designers have decided this is what we want this thing to look like. So now it's time to make our fortune by creating a piece of software that builds this. So we're going to start in our database modeling exercise. And like, how would you rate a multi-table database to build this? How would we represent it? So the first thing that you have to look for is repeated data. It's okay to have repeated data in a user interface because it makes sense. I mean, you want to know, you know, Tin Man, what's the artist? What album did that come from? What genre is it, right? You want to know these things, so the word easy listening has to show a bunch of places. But in a database, we're not allowed to do that. So the thing as a database designer and as a software developer we look for is any kind of repetition. Repetition is bad. It's something we've got to eliminate. So we have to figure out how many database tables we're going to produce, what little bits of stuff go in what database table, and then what are the connections between those database tables. And that's our data modeling exercise. So you take each piece of information and you kind of say, is this a table? Is this define a new table? Or does this belong in a different table? And then we'll connect all these things together. So we've got to break this down. And so the things we got to manage, the data we've got to manage are track, artist, album, genre, rating, length, and count. Now the first thing you often argue about when you're in this meeting is what is the first thing to write on the blank whiteboard. We start with a blank whiteboard. And we're all sitting here, and we got to write this application. We only got like 2 months to write the application, and we got to build a database. So we got a blank whiteboard. And so we got to make these squares and lines. We're going to end up with squares and lines by the time it's all done. And so there's going to be the first one that you're going to put in the middle. And then what happens is we kind of connect everything to it. So it turns out it doesn't really matter which one you start with, but your picture looks a lot better as you build it if you pick the right thing. And what you tend to do to pick the first piece of data to model first is you ask yourself, what is this application about? What is its most essential core concept? What is everything else kind of relative to? Why are we doing this? In something like, say, a banking application, we might say the user is the center. Or an application like Twitter, we might say the user is the center. Tweets kind of come around a user. So it turns out that often a user is the center of the application. The first table that you draw on the picture is user. And in CTools, you might argue whether the core concept is either courses or people. You could pick either one. So we could say users, and then sort of courses connect. Okay. But in our application, which is going to compete with and eventually replace iTunes as the dominant music playing system on the market, it's all about one person. So what is the most core notion among those seven things up there? What is this application really about?
Artist?
Anybody else have any idea? What is this managing? Well, it's got to be one of those.
Album.
What?
Album?
Track? They're all tracks. Tracks, the essential core thing. So it doesn't matter. You could make a mistake and then you start connecting everything. It's just your picture looks pretty if you make the right choice as to what's the core essential thing. So say, okay, we're going to have a table of tracks. Oops. Come back. So our first table is going to be the track table. Now what we do is we look at data that is just part of a track. That every track has one of these things, and it's not one of these repeated string columns. It's not a column that has repeated strings. So what's something that's sort of just as part of a track, and there's no reason to make another table for it?
The length.
The length. Oh, it's the rating and the length, right? So of those remaining four, is any of those really really directly part of the track? The count. Okay. So now the problem is we are left with, and what's also easy is ring, length, and count are numbers. So it's like we don't get too worried about numbers. We just throw them in. So tracks have rating, length, and count. There's four numbers that are associated with the track. Now we're stuck with the remaining things that have repeated strings in them. So now we can't just put them in tracks. So we'll say, okay, we need a table for albums because we're going to have some repetition in albums. And then we need to have a table for artists. And we'll say that albums belong to artists. So AC/DC has a series of albums. An album has an artist. Now, we're being a little sloppy here. But now here's the question. And this is the kind of conversation that you have in one of these meetings. Where does genre connect to?
Album.
Genre connects to album?
Or track?
Or track? Artist?
Mm-hmm.
Not artist?
Experiment with different genres.
Okay, so artist, so it's not artist. We'll agree it's not artist. So is a genre an album or a track? Because it depends. The decision we're about to make is going to affect our user interface. So let's take a look real briefly. Let me bring up iTunes. Okay, so here's Danger Zone by Billy Price, software engineer from Carnegie Mellon University. And its genre is R&B. And so we see all these tracks have the exact same artist and the exact same album and the exact same genre. And if I change the genre of this spot right here to hip-hop rap, if genre is associated with album, that would mean that everything on Danger Zone would instantly be hip-hop rap, because we've decided that there is one genre for each album. So when I hit enter, all those ones below will change to hip-hop rap, because that would be what would be the case if it was connected to album. How many think they're going to all change to hip-hop slash rap? How many think they're not all going to change to hip-hop slash rap? They didn't all change to hip-hop slash rap. So let me change it back to blues and R&B. I just don't want to be confused. If I could spell blues and R&B. So that means that in iTunes, the genre is associated with track. Now, what is a good example how to win this argument? What kind of an album can't have a single genre associated with it? What's a good... What? Uh-huh.
Compilation.
Compilation.
Movie soundtrack.
Movie soundtrack, right? It's going to have some country, it's going to have some rock, it's going to have some easy listening. Right. Okay. And so now we're finishing up our meeting. We got our track that's got rating in it, and it's got length in it, it's got count in it. We got albums, and tracks belong to albums. We got artists, and albums belong to artists. And after a long and ferocious battle, this very, very fierce battle between our software designers and our DBAs and our UI people, we finally have agreed that genre belongs to track. And now we have everything placed in a data model. This is what you would call a logical data model. It's just sort of the breakdown of the kind of separate things that we're going to model and understand. Okay? So that's just, we don't really know too much about databases. The only thing we really did here was figured out what was associated with what and eliminated all these duplicates. And that was pretty difficult. So I think that we all deserve a break, because that was such an arduous meeting where everyone was shouting and upset. So we'll take a break, and then we'll come back in 10 minutes, 2:12. So come back at 2:25. Come back at 2:25, and now we will mechanically transform this into a database schema once we've argued through what connects to what. Okay? So see you. Come back at 2:25.